such inspiring singing, and just being together means a lot to me, and I'm sure it does to you too. I'm going to read two letters tonight, two epistles. They're from Christians in Little Rock. One of them is from an elder, the other is from a preacher, on behalf of the elders and the congregation. This first letter is from the church in Mabelvale, from a brother C.Y. Blakeney, one of the elders there. Dear Jim, he addressed it to me, but it's to all of us. I do not know, do not have command of words enough to tell you how fine a group of workers we had and how we missed them. They were so nice and worked very hard. Some of the folk said tonight how they missed them. Charles Jackson was with them most of the time, and he testified that he thought it was the best group he had ever worked with. I was in the small auditorium every day and learned to love them so much. Yours in Christ, C.Y. Blakeney. This letter from the Pleasant Valley Church, Goble Music. Dear Brother Woodruff, I trust this letter finds you as thrilled and inspired concerning the campaign in the Little Rock and North Little Rock areas as it does this writer. I'm writing this for the elders, as we feel we would certainly be most ungrateful if we did not express to you, on behalf of all of us, our tremendous appreciation and praise for the 18 young men and women who came our way and who worked so faithfully and loyally in this effort. And then he closes it by saying, it was a great week, a period of great influence for the Church of our Lord, and we could not have asked for a better group to work with us. Each home highly praised these campaigners, and on the last night they were asked then to go to the multipurpose area as a group so that all the congregation could express to them our appreciation. Thank you so much that we had the opportunity to share in the May campaign in Little Rock. These are just two of the letters that we'll be getting, and part of the report, the rest of it will be oral reports that we'll be getting, throughout the next several weeks concerning these campaign groups that went to Little Rock. And they almost all, the letters and the reports, limit themselves to talking about the campaign workers. They don't ever say much about the results. And I hadn't noticed it really until I began to think tonight and began to try to summarize what they usually talk about. They usually talk about the campaign workers because that's where the most of the impact, it seems, is made during these campaigns. These young people go out of here, some 200 strong each year, and they go out under the oversight of these elders here, and they make an impact on congregations that you can't measure it. They make an impact on the older members of the church. They give them a shot in the arm. And they just come in there and they surprise these old people. You know, one fella, I guess maybe he expressed the thinking of some of the older people, he just refused to have any of these young people in his home. He said, I'm not going to feed them while they come down here on a vacation. But that old fella, before the week was up, he was asking for some to be allowed to come to his home and stay with him because he saw the dedication of these young people and he saw the work that they did. They're not there on a vacation, they're there for work. And these older people receive renewed zeal. They sense some dedication in these young people that they don't see in themselves or have not seen in themselves for several years. The campaign workers are a blessing to the young people. These campaign workers serve as a rallying point for the young people in every congregation. And I suspect that there were 25 or 30 young people in every congregation, an average of 25 or 30, which would mean that there would be between 250 or 300, maybe 350, among the 10 congregations that were involved in these campaigns. 300 young people being influenced by these campaigners is bound to make a difference in any 10 congregations. And I'm confident that no young people's group will ever be the same after one of these campaigns is conducted in its midst. They serve as a rallying point. They serve as an example. And before the campaign is, before it's a day or two old, these young people in the congregations just flock to those campaigners, and they just follow them around like little puppy dogs. And these campaigners, they just have a tremendous impact upon these young people. They also have an impact upon the homes they stay in. Most of the times, they stay in homes that have young people in them. And I think they must plan it that way, but it should be planned like that if it isn't. But it seems that they go into the homes where there are teenagers, and so many good things happen. They establish pen pals. They correspond with each other then for weeks or months from then on, maybe for, I don't know, for how long. But nevertheless, they send letters back and forth. One girl didn't get home hardly before she had already mailed a Bible back to one of the girls in the congregation where she stayed. And that sort of exchange between the young people and the young people of the congregation is bound to do a lot of good. They're a blessing to the community. They bring in a ray of sunshine, especially this is true in a small community. It's a bit different, I think, with large cities. I don't know whether the people in a large city would recognize a ray of sunshine if they saw it. But people in country congregations, they're not as inhibited. They're not as defensive, in a sense. And yet, I guess maybe they have their own defense mechanisms also. But these young people can get into places I can't get in. They look at me and they think, oh, you're trying to sell something. These young folks go in there, and they don't really know what they're doing there, but they're glad they're there anyway. And so they're a blessing to the community. I think probably you saw the grand total and the breakdown of the responses, and this was only the immediate response, but there was 1,161 immediate responses of one type or other during that 5-day or 6-day period. There were 32 baptisms during that week. 112 people were restored. There were 631 correspondence courses set up, and 386 Bible classes either taught or set up for future teaching, and a total of 1,161. But that was just through the end of the meeting. I stayed over another week in a meeting out at Sandstone Drive, and then throughout that week we were baptizing people, and other responses were coming in just hand over fist, and you just never will know the final result of the campaigns. But it was a good effort, and I'm thankful to the elders and for this congregation, for all of those of you who had a part in it, either as your host families here or the secretaries or whatever was your contribution to this effort. We're very thankful that you had a part in it. Brother Jimmy Jones was one of the people who made the television advertisements. How many of you saw the television ads? You saw some of those. All right, I never could. I watched every bozo program, and I just never could find one of those ads. But Jimmy did a good job. I heard the kind of job he did, and I knew that's what he'd do. I told him, I said, there's no use looking outside Searcy for a man to do this work. Don't go off and hire some professional. We've got one here we can get free. So just... So he graciously consented to do it, and we're thankful that he did such a fine job. I want to make some observations tonight concerning the May campaigns, or probably just concerning campaigns. The observations that I've just made have to do with things that came as results, but I want to make some observations for whatever benefit it may be. I wanted to record these observations, and I think probably you'll be benefited by my making them to you in public. One observation that I feel we must make as we knocked on doors for the week is simply that America's number one god is Mammon. And I hate to say it, but I'm confident that that's true. It may be that it has some other rival that perhaps we were not so able to detect, but the most obvious, at least, let me say the most obvious number one god of America is Mammon. Now, this is seen in the homes that people build and live in. It's seen in their, in our cars, our gadgets, our monstrous boats. Everything that we saw in Little Rock led me to believe that Mammon is a very live god who is making a stab at becoming the number one god of the universe. And I think he's the only real god that is a rival to the true God. But I believe he's there, live and well. Something else that made me come to that conclusion was that one out of every three homes would have someone there when we knocked on the door, but two out of every three homes would have no one there when we knocked on the door. And that simply meant that the husband was working somewhere, but it also meant the majority of the time that the wife was working. The working wife has become a way of life in America. We've geared ourselves economically to where we cannot live on one income today very comfortably. And when you hear of the earnings of America and the high economic rate and the high economic standards by which we live, you'll have to divide that almost always by half, or divide it in half, because that so many times represents two incomes. Now, I know we've got two-income families here all over this congregation. The only difference is that people here make half salary, and that's why I guess we're having to go two income routes here. I'm not so sure that the final result is not about the same. I'm afraid that the children pay the price for it, regardless of what the motive is. And I'm confident that America, our biggest problem is the fact that we've got absent mothers and absent fathers. And we're going to be paying the price. The children are going to be paying the price. They are already paying the price. But I find that Mammon then is America's number one god as far as a false god in opposition to the true God. We've got that kind of a situation in America. And materialism is a number one disease. You might think that lust and that other things but are the number one disease, but I think that perhaps they may run a close second. But I believe that materialism is certainly a disease that affects and afflicts the majority of people in America today. It even afflicts those who don't have much. You still see that the same basic infection is there. They would have it if they could get it. And not having it, they want it, but they don't have it. But nevertheless, I think that must be a conclusion that we would have to draw. But a second thing that I would like to make as an observation is that door knocking is an unnatural means of outreach. Now, and I don't want to discourage door knocking. You'll reach some that you would never reach otherwise. And out of this door knocking campaign, we reach some people that will never be reached, that would have never been reached in any other way. We reached people who had been praying that someone would come and teach them the gospel. One family, a very fine family of people, just that very morning, a man and his wife had been praying together, "Please, please send us someone to teach us the truth." And it said it wasn't 20 minutes later until someone knocked on the door and they came and sat down, and the couple was baptized this past week after the campaign was over. So you meet people like that that you would never probably contact in any other way. You meet them at the door, and yet when you look at the return compared to the input, it's pretty low. The number of man hours invested, and then compare that with the number of people reaped, you find that it's a pretty low percentage. I suspect that this 1,161 responses here, that it took probably 10 or 15,000 doors to be knocked. Maybe 20,000 doors, I don't know, to be knocked in order to get this 1,161. And something else, that this figure here, 1,161, is a very superficial figure, because that 1,161 probably will not produce more than 161 responses if it produces that. Well, you say you're not giving a very rosy picture of door knocking. Well, I'm just confident that it's not a natural method. It's not a natural means. It's an enforced means. It's a hothouse method. It's not natural to its, it's not natural. It's something that people, you have to overcome too much. There's too much of a resistance built up to door knocking for it to really be an effective method for the majority of workers and for the majority of efforts. It's one means of going about it, but it's a means that is not really the most efficient For example, Dixie, the congregation out in North Little Rock, the black congregation, they had a much improved system out there. They simply took their vacations, those black people did, they took their vacations that week, and they went with the workers to their friends and associates and people that they knew. They went with them and told them, "Now we've got some visitors here this week, and we've come to talk to you." And one of them was telling me about it, that they go up and say to these people, "You're going to have to change some of your ways. But we're going to talk to you, and we want you to sit down and listen." And so they would do it. And they set up, in that little congregation, 125 Bible studies in 125 homes. Now, they also had 13 baptisms during the week. When I was out reporting, and I went to each of the 10 congregations to report on what was happening around about, and got out there and was reporting to them about all the correspondence courses that were being set up, Thaddeus Propp said, "What you talking about correspondence courses?" So the Lord didn't send you out to set up no correspondence courses. He said he sent you out to teach and baptize. That's what we're doing out here. He just would have me on high, you know, because, and just razz us because all we were doing was setting up correspondence courses. He said, "That's not what we were sent to do. We were sent to teach and baptize." And he had that thing just running in high gear. They ate there at the building 3 meals a day. They had cooks in there that you'd think were cooking for the Waldorf Astoria. And was it good? They had breakfast about 9:30. They didn't get out too early, you know. They kind of waited around until everybody got up. And they had this thing ironed out in such a beautiful manner that it was just a real thrill to be there with them. But I believe that their method of approaching the city was superior to that of anywhere in the city. It shows by the number of classes that they set up. 125 classes they set up, baptized 13, and had 2 restorations. But a third observation that I would make is that not many noble are called. Not many noble people are called. That's Paul's statement in 1 Corinthians 1. Not many noble, not many well-bred, not many mighty are called. Consider your call, brethren. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. He's just simply saying that your percentage of response among those who are of that caliber of people goes way, way down. And I'm not here to make any particular judgments of any particular group or church, but I'm going to give you the two extremes probably there would have been Pleasant Valley on the upper level and Dixie on the lower level. And Pleasant Valley just simply didn't have the responses that Dixie had. Now Pleasant Valley said they had 109 average non-members attending their services each evening, but I cannot believe that that was the result of the door knocking. I just don't believe it. Their campaign started on Sunday night, for one thing, and the workers didn't get there till Sunday night. So I don't believe that was the real cause for the 109 average attendance of non-members during their meeting. But don't any of you report to Pleasant Valley these statistics or what I say about them. Just keep it mum. They had 1 to place membership. It took 20 or 18 or 20 of those workers for the whole week to set up 13 correspondence courses now. Now that wasn't any reflection on the workers. And there were 6 Bible studies set up by the 18 or 20 workers. Well, what's the difference? And the kids were asking me, "Is it us?" I said, "No, dears, it's not you. It's where you're working. Not many wise, not many of the noble are called." How hard it is, Jesus said, for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And I say rich man, I mean rich man. You'd look up at some of those $75,000 or $125,000 homes, and you'd stand there wondering, "What in the world am I doing here?" That observation, I think, will have to stand. And if I were to be given an opportunity to work in one of the two areas, you know where I'll go. Lord, I'll say, "Send me to Dixie. Not to Pleasant Valley." I think another observation would have to be that discouragement is Satan's number one tool. I made it a point to contact all 10 of the congregations. There were 5 days, Monday through Friday, I contacted all 10 of the congregations, or all 10 of the working groups, Monday morning at their breakfast meeting before they went out, their briefing session. And then I'd contact another one at Monday noon, and then another one at Tuesday morning and Tuesday noon, on through the week until I contacted all 10 of the groups, trying to get them more or less knit together to understanding what each of the others were doing. And it was good. I contacted two of the groups on Monday morning and Monday noon, and then Monday afternoon and Monday night, we worked out in the community knocking on doors. We didn't begin our meeting until Wednesday night, as did some of the others that are the same. But I found that in knocking on those doors, we had enough cold shoulders and enough hard going that I knew where I was going to have to go the next morning. So I went immediately to Pleasant Valley, because I knew what they had encountered out there. I thought, boy, if we're getting this out here in the south end of town, you can imagine what they're getting out there in the west end, out in the Pleasant Valley area where the Blue Bloods are. And I don't have anything against Blue Bloods, except that it's hard to convert a Blue Blood to the Lord. You just don't knock on a $125,000 home as a stranger and do very much good. It has to be done another way. Someone that he knows has to make that approach and teach him the Lord through being an acquaintance. You hardly ever get into those people by just knocking on the door. You hardly ever get past the dog, much less to the people. And so many times they weren't at home. On Tuesday, then I headed straight for Pleasant Valley to talk with them. And when I got there, their faces were about this long, because they had been out all day Monday knocking on doors. I don't know whether they had set up a single class. I don't think they'd gotten a single response that first day. And I pegged it and I said, now look, don't be discouraged. I said, when people reject you and turn you off and shut the door in your face, I said, they're not doing anything that they didn't do to the Lord. He cried over Jerusalem, wept over it, and said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, that stones the prophets and kills those that are sent to you, how often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you would not. And he wept over it. He went to his own hometown. He was in the big city of Jerusalem, and they wouldn't accept him there. He went to his own hometown, just a little wide place in the road. And there were other factors there that kept people from accepting him. And he couldn't do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. And I just told them to not be concerned about it, just pray and do the best they could. And remember that they had not yet resisted unto blood, had they? One old boy raised his hand and said, yes, sir, a dog bit me this morning. He showed his scar. But I told them, I said, unless you're careful, discouragement will disqualify you and absolutely neutralize your effectiveness here. I said, if you're not careful, before you know it, you'll be thinking up imaginary diseases that you have actually emphysema, and that you're actually coming down with a case of pneumonia, and you'll be coughing, you know, and you'll be encouraging it. And I said, let me give you an illustration of it. I said, my very own self yesterday, I said, I was working on a good case of a broken rib. I'd had a wreck over in New Zealand and cracked a rib. Well, I kept punching around on it down in Little Rock after that first day of work until I had it worked up to real soreness. Yeah. And in fact, it was so bad, I had called up the doctor here and made an appointment. I said, I'm going to have to go have it checked. And I worked on that thing until I just kept poking it. Sure enough, I really found a sore spot. And when I started telling them this, they began to start smiling. And I said, you'll be praying for it to rain. You'll be just thinking up every kind of excuse you can so that you won't have to get out there and knock on those doors. Well, they began to respond. They began to, life began, but they were really down in the dumps. And I knew they would be. Finally, they all got together in a circle and held hands to pray together. And someone said, pray for us, or is there anything that you want to ask to be prayed for? And I said, please pray for me that I'll quit being thankful when I knock on the door and there's nobody home. Well, one old boy, it must have touched him. He just got so tickled. It just hit him. He told me afterwards, he said, what you said this morning was like me looking in a mirror. Everything you said, I recognized that I had been doing, trying to overcome the knockbacks and the discouragement that you get when you go to these homes. The next morning, on Wednesday morning, I went to 6th and Izzard. And I was all prepared to tell them the same thing. sixth and Izzard, you know, they're just a big congregation. They're not really all that many rich folks in it, but I guess they have their share. But I got down there to 6th and Izzard the next morning, got there before the workers got there, and I think that Brother John Gibson and Danny Burleson, I think they read me from the very time I came in the door. Because the first thing they told me was, don't come around here throwing any cold water on us. They said, we're doing all right. And I said, yeah, I kind of took me back. And they said, really? You watch what you say. And I hadn't said much, but let me show you. They had had 321 correspondence courses set up and had set up 42 Bible studies in homes. But you see, they weren't working among the upper class of the city. They were working down in the lower and the middle class income people. But nevertheless, discouragement, I think, would almost incapacitates us and makes us ineffective workers. And you know, I have to fight it on a campaign. I fight that one thing every year more than any other thing I have to fight. I have to fight that thing of discouragement. My wife knows me. She says, I'm the world's worst. She says, he'll find a cloud and get under it. If there's any way on earth to keep from knocking on doors, he'll do it. All right. Well, anyway, I think the greatest discouragement that there can be as we approach the world, the greatest discouragement is, number one, riches, and number two, religious division. I don't know of a more discouraging state than to go into a community, knock on doors, and there be so much religious division that the people who are not religious are turned off, and the people who are religious are so sectarian, and already the party lines are drawn, and then the effect upon the young people often is, or it can be, very drastic and very bad. I told the people down there, I'm concerned about two things. I'm concerned about the effect that you have on the community, but I'm also concerned about the effect that the community has on you. And I'm very jealous over those young people. I find that, I find for one thing that the faith that I have is not sufficient, really. God always does exceeding abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. And he always pulls it out to where we find our reason for being there. But every one of those workers, I know, they were on their way home to Mama now. And they took out this week to go down there and work. And every last one of them, at some point or other, thought, what on earth am I doing here in Little Rock, Arkansas, when I could be home with Mama and with Daddy? And they'd all just grin, you know, and they'd punch each other because they'd been talking about it. And yet by about the second or third day, they had found that soul that they were looking for that made them realize, this is why I came. This is why I'm here. And it resulted either in whatever service we could provide, marriage counseling, teaching them, signing them up to a Bible correspondence courses. Many of them experienced the baptizing of the people they'd been teaching. And from that point on, don't ever talk to them about ever not going on a campaign. They wouldn't miss it for anything in the world. And it's a great opportunity for us to develop future missionaries. And I'm thankful for that effect that it has upon our workers. The final thing I...